Welcome to the Been There, Done That podcast with Angela Dunn Cartledge.
Hey there, it's Angela from Been There, Done That. If you're navigating the wild, unpredictable world of grief, I want to invite you to something special. It's called Messy Mornings, and it's our free weekly newsletter filled with real talk, gentle reminders, and support that actually meets you where you are. Each week, I'll send you stories, reflections, healing prompts straight to your inbox. No fluff, no pressure, just the space to release, feel, and heal. You don't have to do this alone. Head over to donethatpodcast.com and sign up for Messy Mornings. It's totally free, and it's made with you in mind. I've been there, and let's walk through this together.
Hi, everybody. This is the Been There, Done That podcast. I'm your host, Angela Dunn Cartledge, and this is my good friend, Julie Sedler. I can't wait to have this conversation about divorce, about motherhood identity, all the things that we're going to talk about today. I can't wait. Thank you for being here, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me. This is one of my favorite things to do, is to be a guest on podcasts and just further this conversation. It's sort of part of my mission, is this idea of normalizing that divorce happens to people, and to like reduce the stigma and the shame that comes along with it. Because believe me, I have been there and done that, and I have worked through a lot of that, as well as the grief. And my whole philosophy is, I have learned a lot of things the hard way, and I want to share that with you so that you don't have to. Like, you can benefit from all of the mistakes and lessons and growth that I have done. Like, that's my part in this world, is to share that so that other people can take that experience and learn from it. Maybe even sparing them a little bit of pain, or giving them a better idea of how to go about going through a situation. That's who I am and why I'm here.
I love that so much. What's so great about your message is that it's so empowering. So let's start there. We are talking about what all of the feelings that come along with divorce. I come from a long line of divorce, and so I know what those feelings feel like from a child's perspective. But from a married adult's perspective, walk us through the typical feelings that you had, and then how you recommend people become more aware of where they are in their process.
Okay, that is a lot. So let's unpack it and unravel it, and we'll start at the beginning. So first of all, I want to sort of come at this with some background. I am not a child of divorce. In fact, I'm the first person in my family, like my immediate family, to get a divorce. So for me, the perspective is a little different. And I think that there are a lot of people who maybe can identify with this, where it's just, it kind of sneaks up on you that this is going to happen. This is where you're headed. This is what this means. The statistic for divorce in the United States is staggering. It's almost mind-blowing. For first marriages, it's almost 50%. And then for second marriages and consecutive marriages, it's even worse. It's not great when we're talking about, you know, the institute of marriage as a whole. And I think what I'd like to separate from that statistic is this concept of, sometimes things just don't work out. And that's not necessarily a failure of you deeply as a person, but more so of doing your best in a partnership to make things work. Maybe even the system is kind of working against you. Maybe even your own internalized beliefs are kind of keeping you in this dynamic that's not serving you. So all of that said, you know, I really believed in marriage. When I got married, I really believed in marriage. I really believed in my partnership. I believed in the path that I was on. I believed that I graduated high school, I went to college, I met somebody, we fell in love, we got married, we bought a house, we had a kid, we had another kid. Like, I believed I was doing the right things in the right order, and I was like, internally, yay. Go me. This is how it's supposed to be, right? And so then that facade starts to get chipped away. Like, hey, I have needs now inside this partnership that aren't being met. So I'm voicing those in my partnership. Hey, can we do these things? Hey, I need help with this. Hey, this is starting to feel overwhelming. And those needs are continually not being met. And I'm internally starting to feel like, is it me? Am I the problem? This is me. I'm the problem. I can't get this together. Everyone else in my life has it together. Why can't I have it together too? There's something wrong with me. And if you were to pick up my book, Watch Me, which is the memoir where I kind of go over, it's over the course of about 3 years where I realize that this partnership is not serving me, to where I find myself in a new partnership, spoiler alert, at the end of the book. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do the same things I did before. That whole time period of ending something and starting something else, there's a lot going on in there. But what I love about this book is that each chapter roughly represents about a month in time. So you can see in real time how things are working out, what my mental thought processes are. And I can really walk you through all of my fears, all of my beliefs, all of the things that I start challenging internally to bring about a different reality. And I think the first step is this like sinking feeling in your gut of, this really isn't what I wanted. This really isn't the reality I had envisioned for myself. And it's that internal conflict. Is there something wrong with me? Is this just not enough for me? Why isn't this enough for me? Why am I the only one who can't make things work? And I'd really love to change the narrative on that, because there's so much in the world today, especially for women, about how the system as a whole is failing you. There is not enough maternal support. There is not enough postpartum support. There is not enough prenatal support. There is not enough childcare. You also have to work a 9 to 5, 40 hours a week, and you're doing more household labor, statistically proven more household labor than your partner's, and you have statistically less free time than your partner. This is for heterosexual couples, obviously, and there are some correlations to same-sex couples as well. That's not as clearly documented, but like, these are real scientifically proven things. It's not just you. You aren't the only one who can't figure this out. The system itself is not working. It's not serving you. And then that impacts our partnerships. And if our partner isn't able to have a conversation with us and learn and grow with us, and we aren't able to make adjustments to that system in order to support our lives, right? Because everybody has their own unique set of circumstances, their own unique life. Things need to work for you. This isn't a one size all solution here. It's whatever works for you. But if you don't have a partner who wants to be a part of that equation, now you're starting to split, right? Now there's a fracture. And the more that that divide grows, the more you start to see yourself kind of out here on your own. And in some cases, it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to pick up. I'm like, I can't let any of the balls that I'm juggling in the air drop. So I'm going to juggle them all. And eventually, you will find a breaking point. And that is what happened to me. Eventually, I found a breaking point. I sought out support elsewhere. That wasn't my partner. So you can read about that. I'm not a saint. I did not do things perfectly. In fact, the whole pitch of this book is I thought that I was perfect, and then I burned my whole life down. Yeah, that is a big, big thing to confront in your life of, I thought I was doing all the right things. Why do I still feel unfulfilled? Why do I still feel like this isn't the right move for me? And what am I going to do? But then that was the next logical question for me was, well, what are you going to do about it? And like, you can see, especially if you read my book, you can see that like my inner dialogue is like another character. So like, I asked myself these hard questions, and then in my body answers, it's like, I'm not going to do anything. That's too scary, especially at the beginning. And that's where I really start to challenge. I really start to challenge a lot of stuff in my life. And that was big and scary and overwhelming. But ultimately, the question I asked myself was, is the scary that I know that I don't like better than the possibility of not knowing that could be better? Right? That uncertainty that could be different, could be better. Can I hold space for that while I'm moving through all this dark, uncomfortable stuff? And eventually that is what I did. That is what I moved towards. But I'm going to be real with you and with your listeners. Moving through the unknown, not exactly like rainbow and sunshiny stuff. In fact, there's hundreds of pieces of literature and artwork that kind of echo that sentiment. You know, basically half of the movies ever made are about the journey through the darkness and how uncomfortable and difficult that is, because it's a human reality. It doesn't matter what you're going through. If there's a journey through the darkness, that is a very relatable concept. I think I touched on all of those points.
You definitely did. And what I heard you say is that it is a journey, and generally it will be an individual journey. But what I also heard you say was there are so many emotions, the guilt, the shame, the expectation that not just we put on ourselves, but our society puts on us as well. And all of those things sort of mix together in this big cocktail of things that we're all trying to work through at the same time, right? We're all trying to do those things. I also have a slog through the mud puddle. And it was worse than a mud puddle. There was some trash in there and some also parts of my story that are exactly like yours. And you feel so disconnected from so many people, but also from yourself, that you don't know what direction to go in. And that is, to me, the biggest disconnect. The biggest message that I want to send is that disconnect can be resolved. You can find yourself again in this process. And that is so, so, so important to be able to do that. I know that through your journey, you, based on what you've explained to me before, but also this conversation, that your journey had ups and downs, twists and turns, lots of, you know, you, I love the way you described it, that you burned your life down. But out of that comes an evolution, a blooming of something new. And I want to talk about the new thing now. So let's talk a little bit about how Julie became a different Julie, a different person to bring to the table, a different person to put into a relationship.
Ooh, juicy. I love that. Yes, let's get into it. So, yes, I meditated almost every morning while I was going through what I would call like the thick of it in the beginning. And I would actually, all I would see in my mind's eye, and this is in my book as well, was a burning dumpster fire. And I had this phrase running through my head of, you're going to burn your whole life down for this? For what? For what? Like, what's coming in to make it better? So sometimes for some people, seeing is believing. But for other people, believing is seeing. And what I did was I shifted those, right? I was that seeing is believing. I need to see it first before I can believe in it. And what I did was fundamentally make that shift of, I believe it's out there for me, therefore I will see it in my life. And like, that's not for the faint of heart, right? Like, that's that fundamental shift deep inside of you is not like, yeah, I think today I'm just gonna change everything about me. That's not where that goes. What it is it's a commitment. It's a dedicated, I'm gonna take this step. I'm gonna take this step. I'm gonna take this step. And often I didn't know what the next step was. And that was what made the process really complicated for me because, again, I'm shifting from that seeing is believing to believing is seeing. I really wanted to know what's the next right step. In fact, I would walk around. Walking was like a really big part of my life for processing. I actually wore out a couple of pairs of shoes, which had never happened to me before. Like, I had to straight up go buy new walking shoes, because the tread on my shoes was just completely gone. It was not uncommon for me to walk 2 to 3 miles a day just to like have the safe space to like work through everything that was going on in my head. But where I'm going with this is that I would often walk around my walk and I would be like, if I knew how to do the work, I would do it. My problem is I don't even know how to get started. And one of the reasons why I wrote my memoir, not a lot of people write, quote unquote, write my memoirs, at the ripe old age of like 38. That's not like, unless you've had a wild, like very high profile life, right? That's not really what would motivate. So the motivation for me was I felt so alone going through all of this, despite the statistic that literally every second person that you meet out on the street of marrying age is probably divorced. I felt so alone. And I know I'm not the only person who feels so very isolated going through these experiences that actually we have a lot of common shared experience within it. There's nuance for everyone. Everyone's experience is just a little bit different, but there are so many commonalities between this that we should be able to find a lot more community. And the reason that we don't find a lot more community is because we don't want to talk about it because there's shame, there's guilt, there's all of these things. And so, I mean, I really left a piece of myself in this book. I really put myself all the way out there to tell people this is normal. That's really normal for a relationship to just not be it, to just not be the right thing for you right now, ever, whatever. And that was the end of moving from seeing as believing to believing as seeing, was getting to that point where I could actually hit publish without, breathing into a paper bag while I did it, right? Like, oh my gosh, I'm hyperventilating. I mean, I still did just a little bit, like had a little bit of anxiety, but by the time I finally hit the publish button, I was actually more excited that my art was going out into the world than I was fearful of people judging me or shaming me or, whatever it was that they wanted to project onto me, because I had actually had so much soul and self-growth through this process to be able to hold myself like, you really can't say anything to me that I haven't already harshly held myself to, right? Like, there's very little that you could say that I haven't already said to myself in my head or held up to somebody else or sarcastically made comments or jokes about, like, haha, laughing it off, trying to make it funny. It's not funny. I feel it deeply, but I'm going to deflect that with my very dry, sarcastic humor. And I think that's one of the things is that I worked so much on my own belief systems. I worked so much on confronting my own fear. I worked so much on deciding what kind of partner I wanted to be and what kind of partnership I wanted to be in, I worked so much on having interests and desires and understanding my own needs and making it okay that I had needs and making it normalized that I fulfilled those needs because that was a part of who I was. And I put a lot of value on taking care of myself and resting and making that normal. It's normal to rest. It is a basic human need to sleep and to prioritize your sleep and to make sure that you get good quality sleep. So there were a lot of shifts, and I'm saying these things, and you know, it's almost laughable sometimes how basic some of the stuff that comes out of my mouth might be. But it's the thing that we forget. It's the thing that we pass over, that we don't make a priority.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I am thinking that same exact thing in my head, that it's the stigma that we're afraid of. It's the judgment that we're afraid of, but it's simple to get out of that. It's simple processes. It doesn't make it easy. I'm saying simple in it's making sure that I'm sleeping. It's making sure that I'm acknowledging my actual feelings out loud, you know?
You are so right. I'm just going to interject this one little thing here. This is the best thing I've ever learned from Julia Child. Okay. This is going to blow your mind. In the beginning of her cookbook, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, right? Arguably her most important piece of artwork that she brought to the people of this world. She says, simple and easy do not mean the same thing. Simple means that it is not complex. Easy means that it is not difficult. So these simple things, we are correct in saying that they are simple things. It does not mean that it is easy. It is not difficult to implement them or to hold them up or to honor them or to give them value. That's the work. That's the work that you put in to do to give these gifts to yourself, to move through these things for yourself. So I want to be very clear about that, because I think sometimes I know my internal dialogue has been, this is so easy, why can't you do it? But that's not actually the right word here. This is very simple. This is not a complex situation, or this is not a complex thing to implement. But that does not mean that it is without difficulty to hold it up and implement it.
Because there's so many layers of that expectation. I mean, we go back to your original point, and that is the societal expectation that we have around these things is different. And no matter what we do, the perception that society has about who we are as women is, especially in America, and especially right now, that we have these expectations and these layers of that expectation on what that looks like. You may not even know that those layers are affecting you. You don't even know what layers you are paying attention to and what layers you're afraid to look at. You don't know that because it was so ingrained in you from the second that you were born that you can't figure that stuff out. Seeing it is believing it. You have to then go around and look for different details and look for different layers and look for different triggers and look for different things that are hitting you and why they're hitting you the way that they are, to then get to the answer about yourself. And what I don't want to transition necessarily, but what I hear in what you're saying is this concept of identity, which we talked about at the beginning of this episode anyway. And that is that we tend to be told as children, as female children, born female children, I should say, that we have to care for everybody else somehow, even as daughters or sisters or whatever. It's not
your job.
Yes.
It's your duty.
100%. That is your responsibility. In some of our childhoods, like mine, I was given responsibility at a very young age, but I didn't have authority. So correct. I had this crazy dichotomy, and I'm constantly doing that, even still, trying to figure out where my place is. And that also plays into the identity piece and the lack of being able to understand what you want. So then you go into a relationship thinking, I know what this is supposed to look like, not because of
what you want it to look like, but what it's supposed to look like.
Exactly. You go into it thinking it based on either examples that you saw, and I'm not talking about Disney movies. I'm talking about like actual real life IRL examples, right? And then you go through it and think, wait, that's harder than I thought it was going to be. That's not working like I saw it working.
You mean it's not just a well-oiled machine that just goes? And then when it becomes difficult, there's something wrong with me. Why isn't it easy?
We gaslight ourselves. We do it to ourselves because we think we are supposed to be able to handle this. My mom did. Or whatever the example is that you have, you know? So reframing the identity piece, if I can make any recommendation to my audience and to anybody that is listening to this podcast, it is that we reframe our constructs of who we are as fast as we possibly can. You have a construct that you get as a child and you build it, but without having a developed brain. Then you get grown up and you need to redefine that as fast as possible. It's going to continue to evolve. I'm saying get rid of the childhood constructs that you built in the first place. How did you see those things? Not outside of your relationship. You saw them about Julie. What did you see and how did you go there?
Okay. First of all, can we hold a moment for a collective primal rage scream? If you're at home, just do me a solid, go and grab a pillow and just unleash a scream into it, because it makes me so angry to hear that this is not just my experience. This is not just your experience. This is probably a collective experience, right? We got sold this story about how our life was supposed to go, but actually, it's not like that at all. And now, at least today, we have opportunities that were not presented to generations before us. And now we have choices, but the societal expectation remains the same. Okay, so I'm just reiterating what you just said. And if you're not angry inside, really, like, we can look at the anger umbrella. That anger may be masking other things like sadness, grief, trauma responses, right? Like, there's a lot that goes on. But if you're not angry, you're angry. Please go rage scream into a pillow. We'll just hold. I'll stop talking.
We will pause for your moment, for your primal scream moment.
Hey, now that we let that out, let me tell you how this came about for me, because everything about this book, Watch Me, is very divinely guided. And I say that as someone who at the beginning of the book, really seeing is believing, doesn't really support a divinely guided life. But believing is seeing does. So this is a spiritual awakening book as well. There's a lot of stuff that goes into here. There's a lot of just really, truly magical moments of like, as I was living this, there's a part of me that's detached that like, this is going to make a really cool movie one day. Like, you have to tell this story because you couldn't have made this work out any better if you had tried. It just sort of effortlessly fell into place at certain really pivotal moments. One of those things is My divorce gets signed right after the stay-at-home orders for COVID. So I had been, you know, like, obviously I go to my job and I'm telling my coworkers about what's going on in my personal life, because you just kind of have that water cooler moment. And they're like, oh yeah, you just get right back up on that horse. You'll go, you're so young. Just go out, meet somebody. Like, you'll be in a relationship in 6 months. Somebody said this to me, you'll be in a new relationship in 6 months. I bet you 20 bucks. And I was like, I don't know about that. Like, inside, what I really wanted was sort of at odds with this external, oh yeah, you've got two young kids. Like, yeah, get back up on that horse, figure this out, just like get right back into it. And COVID really stopped me from the ability to do that, right? I was reeling. I was like, I just turned 35. I legitimately thought that, like, how do you have two small kids. I'm 35. I'm single. I don't go out. I don't. Like, relaxing is like laying on the couch and like watching a TV show or a movie. How am I supposed to meet someone? I'm never going to meet someone. Like, I might as well just hang it all up right now and get a bunch of cats and just call it a day. That's literally what I thought. And I want to be clear, I'm not making a judgment about that lifestyle. That is a perfectly valid lifestyle choice. But what was deep within me was this real desire to figure out how to have a healthy relationship and to be able to model that for my children, because I have two girls. And that was really important to me. So while that would have been a perfectly valid lifestyle choice, I definitely could have done that. That wasn't really aligned with what I wanted when I was really honest with myself. And so to answer your question about how did I actually move through this, I got real about what it was that I actually wanted. And then I started to examine, okay, what am I bringing into this equation? Am I the kind of partner that I'm desiring? Why? Why not? What can I do to be more self-aware? What can I do to, I was really afraid of managing my own money. Had a lot of worries about that. And I had given away my power. And that was a really big fear for me. And I just faced it head on. I just started putting in systems and practices for myself to hold myself, to become really comfortable with taking care of myself. And financial wellness is just as important as emotional wellness, as physical wellness, as your actual, you know, health. And I just started to take these steps. I didn't know what they were. I just kind of felt through it and felt out what it was that I could do. Sometimes I stumbled. Sometimes I would try something and it wouldn't be the right thing for me. And I would come back to the drawing board and I would move forward with something else. And that's perfectly acceptable. But I never lost track of where my goalpost was, where it was that I wanted to go, what it was that I wanted. And when I quote unquote failed, I did my best to do what I call fail forward. Fail in support of moving toward that goal, like kind of throwing a lateral pass, right? I'm not any closer yardage wise, but I didn't go backwards. I'm still failing forward. And so that made it a little more palatable in my brain to keep going, to build my momentum, to not stop. And once I really had some momentum, that believing is seeing, it was a lot easier to sink into that, right? Because then my reality around me really did start to shift. And then I could kind of flow into that a lot easier. So you take a step. That's it. You take a step. But before you take a step, decide which direction you're going. That's the takeaway for people who are listening today. Before you take a step, decide which way you're going.
I really love that you just said it's like a lateral pass. I wanted to stop you and be like, wait, did you just make a football reference? I'm so excited. What I hear you say is it's understanding where you want to go, what you want out of it, and reasonably being able to take small steps, being okay with taking small steps. I'm not going to automatically be able to leapfrog all the hard and get straight to my goalpost instantaneously. It doesn't work that way. Did you ever feel like you needed to adjust the goalpost?
No, I always kind of had that envision. And I will say this. So I got very big into spiritually things, like woo-woo-y things. And one of the things that I found was actually human design. And I found out within my human design that I'm actually a specific manifester. It's like a tiny little buried element, but it made a lot of sense to me. The more specific I was about what it was that I wanted, that actually helped me manifest those goals. Now, manifesting gets a bad rap, so I want to be clear. To manifest, not only do you need to know what you want, but you also have to be willing to take the steps to get it. Right. So let's just call it a spade. It doesn't, like, nothing in my life just fell into my lap. I want to be very clear about that. I took steps. I did the things. That is a necessary element of all of this that we are talking about. If you want to take a journey of 1,000 steps, you actually have to take the 1,000 steps. The wind is not just going to pick you up and blow you there.
What I hear you saying too, is that there's gratefulness along the way, that you find the moments where you can stop and say, okay,
I'm here.
Yeah, I did that part. Okay. So now we're to steps 200 through 300 now, you know, we're in this next phase, and you don't maybe not even know what step you're on. You don't have to know that part, but just to know that you've crossed a bridge is important. Able to give yourself that space.
One thing that I want to interject here is that I took all of my knowledge from all of these things that I've done, and I did create some courses, which I have on my website. But what you're talking about is part of my Aligning Your Dreams and Vision course. And within that, I call that becoming the project manager of your own life. Women are great project managers, probably not because they want to be, but because their life demands it of them. If you can find a way to harness that energy and put it on your own focus, the things that you want, man, women could be just absolutely unstoppable. They are. They just harness it, please go for it. And so what you're talking about, all of these things that you're talking about, I actually do discuss in my becoming the project manager of your own life. And I specifically build in there, celebrate, find moments to celebrate. And I was, and sometimes still am, not great about this. So I actually put things into my calendar, like I have some essays be published on Business Insider. And so the day they go live, I make a point. I actually put it in my calendar. Tonight, I'm celebrating. I'm going to do this, whatever it is that I choose. Sometimes my husband's really excited. We get takeout as a treat, because we don't do that very often. Sometimes I really love champagne. Sometimes I'll open a bottle of champagne, even if it's a Tuesday night, which is generally something I don't do. So the celebration part of it, it does not have to be some big over the top. I'm not telling you to take a huge trip to Disneyland or Mexico or Hawaii or whatever, but I am saying acknowledge where you're at with some sort of, I call them rituals, right? Anything done with intention can be a ritual. So for me, these are my rituals. They make sense for me. They won't make sense for everyone. That's why it's highly individual. But I do, it helps me sink into that gratitude moment. I'm here. The things that past me was dreaming about, those things are in my life now. This is so exciting. I'm so thankful that I'm here. I want more of this feeling, please. Telling the universe that you're thankful for something lets them know, oh, okay. So it's like training your algorithm to bring you more content that you like. That is exactly what you're doing when you're grateful for what it is that you have. Conversely, if you find yourself in a situation where you're not exactly thrilled about what's going on in your life, figuring out what you do want and being grateful for it will put you on the path towards what you do want. So I think that it's important to acknowledge that, especially for the people who are listening along, because sometimes like I would be like, but I'm not where I want to be. Is there something wrong with me if I'm not where I want to be? No, there's nothing wrong with you. Figure out where you do want to go, and then you can invite that in.
Be the best person you can be in that moment, you know, be able to see the evolution. And I've found that it may take documenting the different stages so that you can go back and say, oh, I remember. Okay. Now I remember how that felt. We do move. We evolve. We don't make giant leaps when we evolve, right? We take small steps. And it's so true. It's hard to see that change unless you can look back and see the documentation. So,
and let's talk about that, because people have a difficult time getting that documented. So I'm going to offer your listeners two options here. Actually, three. I'm going to offer you three options. So the first one is you can straight up journal. This is difficult for some people. It was difficult for me. And I turned it around. I've got some tips on that if people want some ideas about how you can turn it around for you. But journaling is one option. The second option is you can use some sort of planning device or system. So I have my own planner and my own planning system, which I'm getting ready to launch this year on my website. I know I'm beta testing it actually. So if you're interested in beta testing, Angela, we can talk about that later. But this is from the neurodivergent Julie, who has become the project manager of her own life. I have honed the system over the last 8 years. I like to go back through my planners, and there's just enough little snippets that I can be like, oh, look at that place that I was in, and oh, look at what I'm doing now. And it really does help train you to see how much you've grown, right? So a lot of progress, like when people go on these journeys, a lot of times they decide that they're going to start with physical fitness, right? I'm going to work out. I'm going to adjust my diet. I'm going to adjust my calories. And then I'm going to be able to see the physical evolution of my body based on the changes that I'm making. And the reason people start out with that is because seeing is believing, not believing is seeing. So you start out with that so that you will believe that the changes that you're doing and the steps that you're taking will be fruitful. But when it comes to working on your emotional wellness or your mindset work or challenging your limiting beliefs, we don't see how that comes to fruition. Seeing is harder to believe. And believing is super hard when you don't see it. I do have a program for like sort of breaking that cycle and challenging limiting beliefs, which is really helpful because I do provide like a framework so you can write it out. That's not super convoluted. But that is why taking these steps, so you can use a journal, you can use a planner, or I'm going to throw out another one that I think is really helpful, especially for people who maybe do sort of identify as that neurodivergent. The voice memo app on your phone is free and super underrated. So you can file, you can label, you can, and then you can go back, like if you're on a walk or if you ride public transit or you're in your car and you can like hook it up to your speaker, you can play those voice memos back for yourself, and they are time and date stamped. So you can be like, oh, okay, this was a year ago. Like what was my, and you verbalize it. I will say there is something for the mind-body connection when you actually physically write with your hand, but if that's just not in the cards for you, because consistency is a really important part of, you know, maintaining progress and momentum, voice memo app is a primo suggestion for people who are not able. And then, you know, sometimes even I'll use my voice memo app and I'll actually like leave it open on my phone as a visual cue. And then later in the day, I'll transcribe it into my journal.
That's what I was going to say, was that transcription of it can be cathartic too, that you're writing it after you were in the big emotion or the big moment. You can write it then and feel both sides of it, feel the catharsis of writing it down, but also you can feel the emotions again as you listen. So I love that idea personally.
And sometimes it just hits different. An hour later, a day later, a week later, a year later, like you never know. And so sometimes that's just like, I will even go in and use that from time to time, even though it's not my preferred modality. It is a tool in my toolkit that I do use. So I like to throw that out there because most people who have cellular phones, that is a free app that is already installed on your phone. So it's not going to cost you any more money. Just basically comes down to space that you have in your phone. So
yeah, you may be able to do it while you're doing something else. If you're concerned about time and being able to sit down and spend the time, you can do it this way and you can get your, because I feel that it's more of a practice, just like you were talking about with meditation, that you can practice the downloading of your emotions and then the journaling becomes less hard. I think we get in our own way sometimes when it comes to dealing with and sitting with emotion, especially. But that's another
episode. Absolutely. That's a whole other episode
thing that we can talk more about. Absolutely. But I really am passionate about us finding ourselves again. That is going to be such a big message for me, for the podcast, for just everything that I think our lives are leading us toward right now. That we need to get back to finding out who we are, because I resonate so strongly with what you said, that if women were to unleash just a fraction of our power, the world would be a completely different place. And the reason that we have constructs built around us not having as much power is because of that concept, that we are boxed in on purpose because of that. So that, again, that could be 12 more episodes also, but I am so passionate that we will be so much better off as a society if we can get back to remembering who we are and what we want and what we can create in this world.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, what do you think about maybe leaving listeners? I like to leave listeners, right? This isn't my community. This is your community. So I like to come in and leave a little gift. I like to have either actionable items people can take or tips or tools or tricks or something. This is my gift to you. I want to leave you with something. So what if I think we're kind of wrapping up. What if we leave your audience with some tips and tools to help them remember who they are? So one great place to start, I'm going to share this with you because I had a coach once who asked me this, and this is sort of foundational to everything that I did and all the work that I did to get to where I am today. So I'm going to share this question with you, and you can use it as a journaling prompt, or you can do what I do, which is that it just sort of intuitively dropped into my body the knowing of how to answer this question. Okay. Moment of pause. Are you ready for this?
I am ready.
How do you want to feel today in this moment? How do you want to feel? So when this person asked me this, immediately it came to me, I want to feel loved and supported. This is at the beginning of my journey. So what that tells me is that that was my need at that moment in time, because I did not feel either one of those things. And that answer then became a compass to guide my decision-making as I started moving through, bumping up against challenges, moving through situations, dealing with experiences, understanding how I wanted to move forward. Does this choice make me feel loved and supported? Do I have the support I need to feel loved and supported? If I accept this help from this person, will that make me feel loved and supported? Venting to this person, will that help me to feel loved and supported? Other people are going to drop in their own version of whatever it is. How do you want to feel? It's going to be different for everyone. But the process that we can use that through to answer the challenges, to answer the call of what comes to us, that can be the same for everyone. Or you can modify it based on how you're feeling in your own life or where you're at in your own life. And so I think that that one question right there is very powerful and might even have a couple of different answers, right? How do I want to feel right now? How do I want to feel in a year? Where do I want to be in a year? How do I want to feel in a year? Might have a very different answer. Right now, I can tell you, I'm feeling pretty overwhelmed. The energy of the earth collectively is a lot. And I want to feel loved and cared for. That would be supportive for me. And so I've been leaning really hard into my self-care practices. I've been going back through my programs and saying, okay, baby, what is it that you teach? You better be practicing that. You better be living that. And are you bumping up against anything? Can you amend this? Can you use this experience to bring people something new or different or something else that you've learned now that you've gone through this experience? How can we get the most learning out of what it is that we're going through, right? Because the lesson, the class that we're taking, we pay tuition for that. I want the most return on my investment for where I'm at. And then my thing is that I want to bring that to you. I want to bring that to the people who are in my communities, the people who want to work with me. How can I use what I know to help you? I don't want to gatekeep. I don't want to put it behind a super duper paywall. I want you to succeed. I know how hard it is to, if you're moving through the same things that I've moved through, I know how hard that is. I want to see you do well. I always say that I'm cheering you on. So that is what I'm saying to all of your listeners here. I'm cheering you on. I want to see you succeed. We bump up a lot against jealousy in this society of what other people have, because we've been told that someone else has it, so it is not available to you. And that is another story that I would love to rewrite, especially as an author. And so that is my little last bit to you, is just because someone else has it doesn't mean it's not available to you. It means it's possible. It's possible to have that. You can have that as well.
There is no scarcity. There is
it's a construct, right? Scarcity is a construct. Because someone else has something, that means it's not available to me. And that's just a lie.
Correct.
Don't be lied to.
Don't
believe it.
Right. That's what I mean by breaking the construct as fast as we can. You know, I want us to realize that there are pieces of that don't serve anymore. How can we work with you? How can we find Julie Sedler? How can we find those amazing courses that you referred to? How can we find your book? How can
Thank you so much for asking. I love that. I have a website. Thank you. This is a spoiler alert. If you read the book at the end, the man that I meet, he's my husband now, and we have another child. So we have this nice, big, beautiful family, which I love. And so he is kind of my guy. He put together this website for me. So it's www.juliesedler.com. I have a media page. I have a live events page. And then the courses are all linked there. My book is linked there. All the information, my bio, everything you could want to know is all available on my website. You can find me on Instagram, Julie_Sedler_author. You can also find me on TikTok and on Threads. And my email is also listed on the website. So if you wanted to shoot me an email and talk to me directly, that is available. And if you tell me that you came from the Been There, Done That podcast, then I'll already know that we're besties. And that makes me happy. Yeah. Is there anything else I can share with you as we're wrapping up?
I'm so thankful for the time that we've had. And I know I'm going to have 10 more questions after this is over. Once I process through, and I am so thankful for your honesty and for your integrity and for your vulnerability, because I think so many people are sitting and listening that don't know what direction to go in. I say it so often on my episodes that I feel like I'm speaking to the silent sufferers, because they don't know what direction to walk in. They don't know what direction to swim in. They're in the middle of the ocean and have no idea where land is. So this kind of an episode is so life-giving to me, but also I know to my audience, because I know that it connects dots for people that just need to know what direction to go in. So thank you so much for being willing.
Well, for those people who, you know, genuinely want, if you want to work with me, I offer one-on-one sessions, I offer custom packages. I actually have posted a thread about this, that the thing that you think is just effortless in life is actually your superpower, and other people don't actually find it to be that effortless. And this happens to be mine. Understanding how to go from A to Z and all the different letters in between and all the little, like, my brain just puts that together really quickly and manages to go, like, figure out that map really quickly. And you can see it in my book, right? Because it's broken out over time. You can see how my brain kind of puts those patterns together, even though I had no idea what I was doing or where I was going. My point here being, you do not need to suffer in silence. There are people out there who can help you cut that learning curve. And I just think that that's just a beautiful thing, that you don't have to bump up against that edge if you don't want to. And I loved that my own journey kind of echoes that sentiment, like being willing to work with other people. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think a lot of people who listen to you and a lot of people in the world, they really do. They want to go far. And this community is going to be the thing that gets us there. So I just thank you so much for opening up your community space to me. I'm getting a little choked up, actually. And I can feel some of your emotion through the screen, too. I feel like this was a really powerful chat. I hope we have an opportunity to have more chats in the future. People need this right now. And I'm so thankful that I get to be the one to help further that. That makes me feel like I'm doing my work in the world. And I hope other people will come along with us, because, again, that community is going to be how we go far.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Hey there. It's Angela from Been There, Done That. If you're navigating the wild, unpredictable world of grief, I want to invite you to something special. It's called Messy Mornings, and it's our free weekly newsletter filled with real talk, gentle reminders, and support that actually meets you where you are. Each week, I'll send you stories, reflections, healing prompts straight to your inbox. No fluff, no pressure, just the space to release, feel, and heal. You don't have to do this alone. Head over to donethatpodcast.com and sign up for Messy Mornings. It's totally free. And it's made with you in mind. I've been there, and let's walk through this together.